I want you to imagine for a moment what life would be like for you if you were able to predict the future. And I mean genuinely predict the future. Not like the young schoolboy who was sitting in his class and the teacher was presenting a lesson about clairvoyancy and palm card reading and so forth. And she said to the class in general, do you know anybody who can read the future by cards? And immediately the little fellow's hand went up. And the teacher was surprised and said, what do you mean? Tell me what you know. And the little fellow jumped up and he said, my mother can read the future by cards. Well, the teacher was really amazed now and said, what do you mean? Tell me more. And he said, well, you know, when I take my report card home, she takes one look at it and she says, I know. She tells me exactly what's going to happen when my dad gets home. You know, friends, we as human beings have been fascinated by the future. We are all wanting to know what the future holds in store. We as humans have been fascinated by the future. We want to be able to know what fate holds in store for us. And for that reason, we are fascinated by civilizations, by individuals who claim to be able to tell the future. We all want to know the future. Even in our modern society today, friends, did you know that about 70% of people read the horoscope? 70%. I picked up a copy of the Sydney Observer magazine just recently, the May magazine, and I was fascinated by one of the lead articles, and I've copied just a few lines to share with you. Now, this is the prominent monthly magazine that covers all of the North Shore. Notice what it says in one of the lead articles. Psychic reading is becoming mainstream activity on the North Shore. To find out what the future holds for them, people are looking for a guide to help them make sensible decisions. Business is booming. Notice for who? Clairvoyants across the North Shore, with cashed-up locals turning to psychics for guidance on relationships, careers, and money. Psychics, astrologers, and palm readers report a huge surge in demand from a new class of customers. Now, I was fascinated. Who are these new class of customers that are using clairvoyants, psychics, and astrologers to predict the future? Who are they? Listen to who it is. They are high-powered professionals who want advice on how to boost their personal wealth or to get lucky in love. We want to know the future. And friends, it's not people on the fringes of society who are looking for answers with clairvoyants, astrologers, psychics, and palm readers today. In fact, just this past month, the month of May, saw three major predictions that captured news headlines. That's just this past month. Now, you might think, well, these must be people over there in Africa or some remote part of the world. No, friends. The first prediction concerned a major earthquake that was to strike Rome, the capital of Italy, on the 11th of May, 2011. I want to read you what the Telegraph said. Italians are fleeing Rome. Why are they leaving Rome? They are fleeing Rome today over fears a giant earthquake will strike on May 11, 2011. Why were they running? Why were they fleeing the city of Rome? Friends, here's the reason. A prediction was made in 1915 by an individual by the name of Raphael Bendandi. He was a self-made seismologist who began to study about earthquakes. Not only did he study about them, but he began to make predictions. And he predicted that there would be a huge earthquake that would strike Rome on May 11, 2011. You know how many people left Rome? 1 in 5. 20% of the sophisticated residents of modern Rome left because this guy made a prediction back in 1950. Friends, this is just a couple of weeks ago. Modern, sophisticated Westerners. People who live in the capital of Rome. And then on that very same day, a prediction was made in Taiwan, or concerning Taiwan, about another earthquake that was to take place on the very same day. It was made by self-styled prophet Wang Chao Hung. He predicted, friends, a major earthquake of a magnitude 14 that would strike Taiwan on the 11th of May, 2011. Just a couple of weeks ago, there was so much panic among the residents, the citizens of Taiwan, that the authorities wanted to arrest our friend Wang Chao Hung, and they took him to the prosecutors because he had caused such a disruption in the community. But this is just a couple of weeks ago. Then the third one was the doomsday prediction made by a Christian radio announcer. He predicted that on the 21st of May 2011, that Jesus would return and he would take away the goodies, the good people among us. The left of those who were left, the remainder of us, we would be afflicted by fire, by brimstone, by earthquakes, by volcanoes, in a period that he referred to as the tribulation. Listen to what he said. This guy's name is Harold Camping. He said the world will end on the 21st of May 2011. People hid. When he miscalculated, and we're all still here, he said, look, I made a bit of a mistake. It's not the 21st of May, it's the 21st of October. So look out for the 21st of October. This is how newspapers reported it. Warnings by a Christian doomsday prophet, Harold Camping, that the world would end on Saturday, the 21st of May 2011, sent some people into hiding and others into deep depression. But friends, these aren't the first people to incorrectly predict the future. People have been trying to predict the future for as long as history has been in place. You see, predicting the future is a risky business. And I want to share with you today some of the biggest blunders as far as predictions in modern times, in modern history. Listen to this one. The horse is here to stay. The automobile is only a fad. That was advice given to Henry Ford from one of the bank managers or presidents that he went to borrow money from. You know, friends, there are 750 million cars in the world today. Here's another cracker. Heavier than air flying machines are impossible. That was a statement, a prediction made by Lord Kelvin, president of the British Royal Society. Today there are over 500,000 aircraft in our skies. How about this one? I think there is a world market for maybe 5 computers. Do you know who made that suggestion or prediction? Thomas Watson, the chairman, mind you, of IBM. Today, friends, across the world, there are more than 1 billion computers. How about this one? Television won't last because people will soon get tired of watching a plywood box every night. Well, we all know that there are many televisions around. In fact, there are over 2 billion televisions in the world today. Here's another beauty. We don't like their sound. And guitar music, it's on the way out anyway. That was the president of Decca Records when he rejected the Beatles. You know how many records the Beatles have sold? Over 1.6 billion records. Now, how's something a little more up to date? Next Christmas, The iPod will be dead, finished, gone, kaput. So said Alan Sugar just a couple of years ago. Over 250 million iPods have been sold worldwide. Predictions that have been terribly, terribly wrong. How about this one? Twitter, as we know it, will fade away. How many? Twitter users, 200 million users in the world, 65 million tweets every single day. Friends, predicting anything human is a risky business. But you know, despite the risk involved, ancient civilizations have been fascinated by the future. And like we are fascinated by the future, every civilization has had an interest in the future. And as they've tried to understand and predict the future, they've studied the writings, the sacred texts of the so-called prophets. They've studied the alignment of the planets. One of the civilizations that in particular has interested us in this regard is the Mayan civilization. Now, the Mayan civilization stretched for 4,000 years. Now, just get a handle on this, friends. From 2500 BC right through to 1500 AD. Now, to put that in some sort of perspective, let me remind you that that is twice the time that has passed since Christ was on earth. So this was some major civilization and a very advanced civilization. You can see they occupied the territory of southern Mexico, Guatemala, here Honduras, and up into Belize. So it was an extensive empire that involved a number of kingdoms. Now, the Mayan civilization are a real enigma to us today. And the reason for that is they built amazing pyramids. I mean, they built some of the most amazing stone monuments ever by any human race, any human civilization. Yet they never got beyond stone implements. They never got bronze or iron. They just used stone implements to build those magnificent monuments. Amazing, amazing. They invented the concept of zero, but you know, they never invented the wheel. Amazing. They had a very advanced civilization, but yet they engaged in human sacrifice. They killed literally tens of thousands of people by human sacrifice, and yet they were such an advanced civilization. You can visit Chichen Itza and many of their centers today and just stand amazed at the brilliance of the Mayan civilization. They were also so advanced that they invented a written hieroglyphic script. Now, you might say, so what? Friends, let me remind you that only twice in human history has human writing been invented. Everybody else has copied somebody else. One of those civilizations was the Mesopotamian civilization, that group of people that lived between the two rivers in modern-day Iraq is where it was located. And they lived in that area and they invented a wedged shape form of writing. The other group were the Mesoamericans, the Mayan. Now, there's some debate today whether the ancient Egyptians and the ancient Chinese may have invented writing. But there are only two civilizations where there is no doubt: the Mesopotamians and the Mayan civilization. So here is an amazing group of people. Now, these Mayans were expert astronomers. They were fantastic in tracing and tracking the movement of the heavenly bodies. They were outstanding. They were mathematicians and they predicted it in great detail. And they built entire cities that worked as astronomical observatories. And if you go to Chichen Itza today and many of the other Mayan centers, you will see their beautiful observatories there in all their glory. They were truly fantastic. And friends, listen to this. They calculated the exact duration of the year to a thousandth of a decimal point. Think of that. They were truly magnificent astronomers, very advanced in being able to read the heavens and predict future eclipses and so on. They predicted every solar and lunar eclipse right up to our day. Can you believe that? Right up to the present. Such was their civilization. Very advanced, great astronomers. And they would study the movement of the heavenly bodies, particularly interested in eclipses. And they recorded these eclipses and other astronomical events in paper books made out of a type of bark. These books were called codices. Now, they were beautifully handwritten, of course, and drawn. And they folded them up just like a concertina. And we have a number of these that are remaining. But friends, what happened was this. When the Spanish conquistadors conquered this part of the world, they gathered all these codices together. And as they began to read them and understand them, they were frightened by them. And they were concerned that they contained pagan witchcraft and all sorts of other things that they objected to. And so they burnt them. They burnt every codice that they could find. Everyone. And so today, only three Mayan codices have survived. The Dresden Codex, the Madrid Codex, and finally, the Paris Codex. They are named after the location where they are housed in a museum today. So if you want to see the Dresden, you have to go over to Germany and so on. And they are the only three that remain intact. Now, of the three codices, the Dresden Codex is the most complete. And it truly is a magnificent work of art. Truly complete in all its forms. It was written here at Chichen Itza in southern Mexico in the Yucatan Peninsula. It was written by 8 different scribes. And it was written on 74 pages. It's made up of a total of 74 pages written back and front. Now, friends, this Dresden Codex contains some chilling information. It's information that has disturbed a lot of people today. Of course, Hollywood's picked up on it, and so is the media. But it truly is chilling information. And in order to grasp it, we have to understand a little about the Mayan calendar. Now remember, they were great readers of the heavens. They were great astronomers. They studied the eclipses, the length of the year and so forth in great detail. They had a very complicated method of keeping track of time. You know, we have one calendar and all our time measurements fall into that one single calendar. But not the Mayans. They had 3 different calendars. But the one that's of special interest to us and the most important of those 3 calendars is what is referred to as the long count calendar. Now, the long count calendar ends or expires on the 21st of December 2012. So just make sure we're all clear on that. This long count calendar, which has measured time for 5,000 years, for more than 5,000 years, it expires, it comes to an end, 21st of December 2012. And so next year is causing a lot of anxiety in the hearts of many people. And of course, as I mentioned, Hollywood's made a movie of it all, and so it's beginning to whip up a lot of hysteria. And friends, I guarantee you this, that over the next 12 months or so, you are going to hear a lot more about the Mayan calendar, the long count calendar that ends in the year 2012. So, this is what it says, according to the experts. On the 21st of December 2012, you know, that's not all that far away, the calendar cycle ends. It'll be point zero. Time will be up for planet Earth. It will literally be the end of days. The end of civilization and life on this planet, according to the Mayan calendar and those who read it. And so, friends, that is why many people are calling it a countdown to Armageddon. A countdown to Armageddon. We're heading for the 21st of December 2012, and that's going to be the end of life and the end of civilization as we know it. So what are we to make of it all? Do we take it seriously? Should we stop planning our careers? Should we put our plans to build a house on hold and wait and see what happens? I like the next suggestion most of all. Let's go out and borrow all the money that we can, spend our big, because we're never going to have to pay it back. But friends, in all seriousness, should we take any notice of all of this? This desire to know and understand the future. Should we take it seriously? I don't know if we have any prophets in the house this afternoon, but I need one. So if you will just bear with me, I'm going to track one down. Let me see if I can find a prophet here. Sir, would you come up and join me up the front here? You look a brave man. I'm sure you can come and come up here and help me. So here we have our modern day prophet. Thank you so much, sir. Come right up here. I'm going to give you a mic. When you got up this morning, you had no idea that you were going to make a prediction about the future in front of several hundred people. But I'm going to help you and I'm going to make it very easy for you, because I'm going to provide the prediction that you are going to make. All you have to do is read your prediction out loud and clear to everybody here. So hold the mic up close and let's hear your prediction. But before we do, what is your name?
Kevin.
Kevin. Glad to have you with us, Prophet Kevin. And let's hear your prediction.
On September 24, 2011, BHP Billiton shares will increase by 1,000% for a period of 48 hours only.
Take note.
On September 26, 2011, BHP Billiton shares will return to their original price and it will be business as usual again. This will be a non-off occurrence. It has never happened before and will never happen again.
So, what a prediction. We know the future. Now, Kevin, we're going to get your advice. Let me just get the advice here. So, here comes the advice with your prediction, following your prediction.
Raise every cent you can and buy BHP Billiton shares. Sell your house, your car, and everything else you own, and then borrow as much as you can and buy shares. This is once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to become a wealthy and obtain financial security for you and your family.
Well, there you are, friends. All right, Kevin, let's just have a look here for a moment. How many people are going to rush home and sell their house here? How many? Oh, we're in trouble here. Is anyone going to sell their car? Is anyone going to go to the bank and borrow everything you can to rush out and buy shares? Friends, this is a golden opportunity. A golden opportunity to become very wealthy. Kevin, it doesn't look as if they're taking your prediction too seriously. But listen, never mind. Just wait there one moment. You are definitely not a prophet, according to everybody else here, but you're a great sport, a good sport, and I want you to take that back with you. And thank you very much for participating in our program today. Kevin, thank you very much. So, friends, it looks as if we're not going to all rush out to buy shares. Now, if I was taking Kevin at all seriously, there's some information that I would want to know. Before I sold my house and my car, and with a big smile on my face, rushed out to buy up shares because I wanted to make it big. You see, in order to take the prediction seriously, I'd want to check Kevin's credibility. I'd want to be saying, Kevin, have you ever worked for BHP? Have you ever had anything to do with the share market? What sort of training do you have? So I'd want to check Kevin's credibility pretty closely before I invested everything in his prediction. Then I'd want evidence. I'd want proof that Kevin can accurately predict the future, wouldn't you? I mean, look. Let's look at it this way. If Kevin genuinely could predict the future, then I'd be taking this very seriously. This is a great opportunity. But before I did that, before I risked everything on that prediction, I would want evidence, I would want proof that Kevin can accurately predict the future. I'd be saying to Kevin, where's your education? What's your background? And then I'd want to see his track record. I'd be saying, Kevin, what other events have you accurately predicted? Can you provide me some sort of evidence here that will convince me that you can predict the future? Isn't that what you'd be doing? And friends, that is the problem with the Mayan calendar prediction of 2012. That's the problem we face because, you see, we have limited facts and information about the prediction. In fact, if you read the Dresden calendar, the Dresden Codex, you will find that it makes no prediction whatsoever about the end of the world. Yes, the calendar does end on that date, no question, but it doesn't tell us what is going to happen. There is limited information, limited facts about the 21st of December 2012. So that's the first thing we need to know. Because, friends, this is an issue. We are going to hear more and more about the Mayan calendar and 2012. There's no credibility. When you look at Mayan writings, those that we have, and you read the glyphs on the walls of their buildings, you find that there's no evidence that they have been able to predict accurately other events in world history. It's just not there. So we have limited facts and information. We have no credibility tied in with this claim. And then there is no evidence or proof that they've been able to predict earlier and repeated events in history with any accuracy. When it boils down, there is no track record that the Mayans have ever been able to accurately predict what the future holds in store. But friends, let me ask you this question. What if we could find in some ancient document or in some person a string of prophecies that do have a track record? What if we could find a set of prophecies outlined that you and I could read and then go back through history, check them out, and see that they were accurate and fulfilled in every minute detail? What then? What if we could examine predictions that go back through the centuries of history and discover that they were right? What about it, friends? I invite you to come with me to another ancient civilization. We're going to cross the Atlantic now. We're going to leave South America and we're going to head to North Africa. And we are going to visit the Great Giza Pyramids. You know, friends, this is another civilization with pyramids. They were built 4,500 years ago. Now, I want you to just consider that carefully for a moment. Built 4,500 years ago, they are still the largest man-made structures on earth. Can you believe that? We often think of the ancients as cavemen, ignorant, uneducated, unsophisticated. You know, friends, we still don't know how they built those pyramids. We still don't know. With all our modern knowledge and techniques and brilliance, we still don't know how the ancients built those pyramids 4,500 years ago. They are the most visited site on earth. Now, friends, the Egyptian civilization, the empire, lasted thousands of years. Now, here's my question again. What if there were a string of predictions about what would happen to this empire hundreds or even thousands of years into the future? And you and I could go and check them out. I'm going to show you this afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, that there is one book that has that track record that you can check, examine, and verify through literally thousands of years of history. You can check the evidence and examine the proof in detail for yourself. You know, the Egyptian Empire lasted thousands of years. Egypt had the longest line of kings of any nation on earth. Last of years, it was the superpower of its age. And the head of that empire was the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh was worshipped as a god king. He was considered God on earth. And the well-being of the people depended on the well-being of the Pharaoh. And so the pyramids were built to protect and to house the body of the Pharaoh, to protect his soul. And so, friends, when they buried the Pharaoh, they buried the wealth of the empire there in the pyramids, in the grave with him. There was only one problem with that. What do you think it was? It told the thieves where the treasure was. You know, it's a pretty big monument that says, "Here I am with all my treasure." None of the pyramids survived with their treasure. The treasure's all gone. You can go to Egypt today, you can walk into the burial chamber, you can see where the Pharaoh was buried, but no treasure there. And so what the Pharaohs, these god kings, these so-called god kings did, was they decided to forget about building big pyramids to be buried inside. They decided that they would come down to this place, about 800 kilometers south of the Giza Pyramids. At a place called Luxor, you find the Valley of the Kings. 49 pharaohs are buried here in this desolate valley. 49 of them. Their tombs were dug into the cliffside, into the cliff face. There, 49 of them were buried. The longest line of kings of any nation. But you know, friends, when these pharaohs ruled supreme on planet Earth, along came a little Hebrew prophet by the name of Ezekiel. Now, at this time, by the way, this was when Ramesses II and Thutmose III, two of the most powerful of all the Egyptian pharaohs, ruled. They were a powerful, powerful leader who led a powerful, powerful empire. Israel, was nothing. No power, no relevance, no authority. And so when these pharaohs ruled the world, along came this little Jewish prophet. I want you to listen to what he said. "There shall no longer be princes from the land of Egypt." Was he insane? What was he thinking? making a prediction like this. Here is the longest list of kings anywhere in the world. And he comes along and says, hey, it's not going to go on. It's going to stop. Friends, here's what's amazing. From 500 BC right down until today, the land of the Pharaohs has not had an Egyptian prince. Let me go over that. Since 500 BC, no Egyptian king has occupied the throne of Egypt. Not one. They've had Persian overlords. They've had Greeks, Romans, Albanians. The British have been there. The French have been there. But no Egyptian prince has sat on the throne of Egypt since 500 BC. Not one. Now, you might say, well, fair enough, that's a lucky yes. He got it right once. But I want you to come with me a little further as we explore ancient Egypt. And you know, friends, the best way to visit Egypt and see the magnificence of the country is to get in a felucca. They still build those felucca, these boats, exactly as they did in the days of the pharaohs. Get in one of those feluccas and you can see all of Egypt as you travel down the Nile. I'll tell you why. Egypt is desert, part of the Sahara. The only green strip in all of Egypt is found along the banks of this mighty river, the Nile River. You travel, all the monuments of Egypt are found along the banks of the Nile River. Now, as you travel along the Nile, you see some magnificent vegetation. It's very fertile land because all the silt from Central Africa, the floods brought it and deposited it along the banks of the Nile. And it grows just about anything. And it can grow several crops a year. It's so fertile. And so you find vegetables, you find fruit, you find the palm growing in abundance. But you know, friends, as you travel along, there's one thing missing. Something very important is not found along the banks of the Nile River. And that is the papyrus reed. It was so important to the ancient Egyptians that they used it as their logo, as their symbol of power. And so Lower Egypt was the lotus and Upper Egypt was the papyrus. It was their symbol. And the reason that it was their symbol was that it brought them wealth. It brought them wealth. You see, the Egyptians were the first people to discover paper. Paper comes from papyrus. They were the first to manufacture paper. They made it from the papyrus reed. And they used paper to gain their wealth, to buy the gold of the world. The papyrus reed. It was everywhere. And they harvested it and they turned it into paper, papyrus paper. And they became extremely wealthy. And you know, friends, at the time when they were the wealthiest and the greatest nation on earth, and they gained a lot of that wealth from the papyrus reed, along came another Bible prophet by the name of Isaiah. Listen to what he said. The papyrus reeds by the river will wither, be driven away, and be no more. What was he thinking? The papyrus, it was everywhere up and down the banks of the Nile. It was along the creeks and the brooks. It was everywhere. They made their living from harvesting the papyrus and turning it into paper and exporting it over the then known world. All over the then known world. And here this guy comes along and he says, the papyrus reed shall be no more. You know, friends, you can travel the length of the Nile in Egypt and you will not find the papyrus reed. It's gone. It's gone. It's nowhere to be found. Lucky again? Maybe. Let's go to and have a look at another place in Egypt that's well known to most tourists. This is Memphis. Memphis was the capital of ancient Egypt for many, many years. And it was the center not only of political power, but also of religious power. This was the home of the great Apis bulls that the Egyptians worshipped. If you see Egyptian curios and monuments and paintings and so forth on the hieroglyphs, you'll see the Apis bull there. The horns, the head, the horns with the sun, the orb of the sun in the center of those horns. This was the center of religion for the ancient Egyptian empire. But you know, friends, as you walk through Memphis today, in fact, I've taken many tour groups to ancient Memphis. When they get out of the bus after seeing the pyramids, because this isn't very far from the Step Pyramid, the magnificent Step Pyramid, the first pyramid ever built. And so after people have seen Giza and the Step Pyramids, you bring them here to Memphis and they say, what are we doing here? When are you going to show us what there is to see here? The reason being, friends, all the monuments at Memphis are broken down. You see, what in its heyday, and by the way, this was one of the biggest cities in the ancient world. It would take you half a day to walk from the center in any direction to get to the end of the city. It was a big city. And its streets were lined with statues of the gods that they worshipped. And so the city was just full of these idols that the people worshipped. But when you go there today, it's amazing. There's not one intact. They are all smashed wherever you go. This was a great monument that once stood of Ramesses II. Look at the size of it. Look at the people standing there to the right. Magnificent, but it's all smashed and broken. It's lying down. It's fallen over. And as you walk through Memphis, one step after another, all you see is broken down monuments. This is Memphis. You can see there's nothing there. Parts of it are just a rubbish tip. When you go back to see the head of that great statue of Ram, look at the ear, all broken off. They are wrecked. They are broken down. The beautiful alabaster sphinx. But look at it. It's all corroded. It's ruined. They can't do anything with it. Memphis, capital of the world, center of religious worship in ancient Egypt. And yet everything there is destroyed. Now, friends, I'm going to tell you something absolutely amazing. When Memphis was the greatest city on the planet, remember Ezekiel? He had something to say about it. Something quite astounding. And in his day, people must have ridiculed and mocked him. This is what he had to say. This is what the Sovereign Lord says. I will destroy the idols and put an end to the images of Memphis. And friends, when you go there, that's exactly what you see. Now, you might be saying, but hold on, Gary. It's an old place, but what do you expect? Of course they are all going to be bashed over, fallen over, knocked down and broken. But friends, let me tell you something. Those of you who have been to Egypt well know that if you go to the other major centers in Egypt, for example, if you go down to the Karnak Temple, by the way, this temple at Karnak, at Luxor, is the greatest religious temple ever built. It is enormous. And friends, when you go there, you find the statues all intact. You go down to just across the way a little to the Luxor Temple, and there again you can see hundreds of these statues, these idols, still in place. Look at the two sitting down there, massive, all intact. You go down to Abu Simbel, and once again you find that they're intact, being relocated, but virtually perfectly intact. But when you go to Memphis, nothing there. Smashed, broken up, all in pieces. Now, friends, notice what we've seen in ancient Egypt here today. We've seen a prediction that the royal line of Egyptian princes is going to stop. We've seen that the prediction the papyrus reeds will disappear has been fulfilled in every detail. We have seen that the idols of Memphis, the prediction that they will be broken down, has been fulfilled in minute detail. Now, friends, I would suggest to you this afternoon that quite a track record the Bible has. And let me tell you this. It's not just about Egypt. It's not just about Egypt. In fact, there are over 1,000 predictions or prophecies in the Bible. And you know what? they were right every time. Every time. Now you might say, okay, that's Egypt, but let me take you to a little further north to Lebanon, to a troubled part of the world. This is Tyre. This was the capital city of the ancient Phoenicians. They were great sailors. They were the first sailors to be able to track their way across the waters by night. They followed the stars. And because they were able to travel at night, they could travel so much further than anyone else. And they traveled the world bartering. And they brought the wealth of the world back to this city, Tyre. It was a magnificent city. But you know, friends, the Bible has something very interesting to say about Tyre. Notice what it is. I am against you, O Tyre, and will cause many nations to come up against you. Notice this. I want you to notice this in detail, friends. And they shall destroy the walls of Tyre and break down her towers. I will scrape... Now, this is just amazing. Listen to this. I will scrape her dust from her and make her like the top of a rock. It shall be a place for the spreading of what? Nets. Let's read on. This is becoming stranger and stranger the further we read. Behold, I will bring against Tyre from the north Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. He will heap up a siege against you. They will lay stones, your timber and your soil in the midst of the water. I will make you like the top of the rock, top of a rock. You will be a place again for spreading nets. And then all the princes of the sea will clothe themselves with trembling. What an amazing set of predictions about ancient Tyre. Now, friends, when you study this in detail, you find that there are 8 clear predictions in this prophecy. 1, the prophet said King Nebuchadnezzar would attack Tyre. He would be the one who would attack the city of Tyre. Nebuchadnezzar would lay siege to the city. So it not only identified the individual, but it mentioned the method that he would use to overthrow the city. Then it said other nations would participate in destroying Tyre. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar wouldn't totally destroy Tyre. Other nations would become involved. Then fishermen would spread their nets where Tyre was once located. Now, let me just go on here. All right, 5. Tyre's stones and timbers and even the dust. Did you read that? Even the dust would be thrown into the sea. Tyre would be made flat like the top of a rock. Other cities would be seized by fear at the fall of Tyre. Tyre would never be rebuilt on the original site. Now, friends, that's quite an amazing and strange set of predictions concerning the city. But that's what the Bible said. That's what it said. Now, friends, it's stranger than fiction, but let me tell you what really happened. In the year 586 BC, King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon left his beautiful city and he traveled from Babylon here, you can see Babylon. He traveled all the way over here to Tyre on the Mediterranean. He couldn't break through the city immediately. So you know what he did? He besieged the city for 13 years. When he eventually broke into the city after 13 years, you know what he found? That those tricky Phoenicians, they'd got in their boats and they'd traveled to an island 1 kilometer off the shoreline, and there they were living and having a great time, waving to Nebuchadnezzar back, because Nebuchadnezzar had no navy. So he couldn't reach them. He had to turn around and he had to go home after a siege of 13 years. Nothing happened. And people thought, the prediction, it's false. But friends, 250 years later, in the year 332 AD, along came... Along came this fellow, Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great wanted to put fear into all the cities throughout the Middle East. And he said he's going to make a point, an example of Tyre. So he turned up on the location of the old city. He had no navy. And the people of Tyre were over on their island, waving to him like they did to Nebuchadnezzar, scoffing, making fun. And it really made him mad. Really mad. So you know what he told his soldiers to do? He said, what I want you to do is this. You go through that old city and you begin to gather up all the rubble. And you throw it into the sea and we are going to make a causeway. We are getting over there. And heaven help them when we do. And so the soldiers went to work and they took all the rubble, all the timber, all the towers, and they threw it into the sea and they made a causeway. And they got almost there and they ran out of material. You know what Alexander said? He said, get back to that old city, scrape the very dust of that city up, put it in buckets and take it out there. We are going to get there. And friends, that's exactly what happened. They went back, they scraped the dust of that old city up, put it in buckets and they finished their causeway and he absolutely destroyed the city of Tyre. Isn't that amazing? Friends, every detail of that prediction was fulfilled. It gives you an idea. Here's the old city. You can imagine the old city here. Here's the island where they were living. He said, scrape all the rubble, the timber, the towers, and throw it in, and let's make a causeway. And friends, that's exactly what happened. When you go to Old Tyre today, that's what you see. Fishermen with their nets. Where the old city of Tyre used to stand, you find fishermen spreading their nets today. Wherever you go, right across Old Tyre, you can see this is where the island was, and the old city was along here. Over the centuries, the silt has built up, and it's quite a big area now. But friends, where Old Tyre was, nobody lives today. It's as flat as a rock. It's a place where fishermen dry their nets. 8 clear predictions in this prophecy. 1, King Nebuchadnezzar would attack Tyre. And friends, it was King Nebuchadnezzar. Check your history books. Nebuchadnezzar lay siege to that city for 13 years. Other nations would participate. He couldn't get them. He couldn't get over to the island. But it was the Greeks who came through and finished the job. Fishermen would spread their nets there. We've seen that. Tyre stones and timbers and even its dust would be thrown into the sea. We've seen that. Tyre would be made flat like the top of a rock. Other cities would be seized by fear. When they saw what happened to Tyre, they just opened their gates and said, Alexander, you are welcome. Come right in. Have whatever you like. They were so fearful after seeing what happened to Tyre and seeing the determination of Alexander. Tyre would never be rebuilt on the original site. You know, friends, those Bible prophets who made these strange predictions, they went a way out on a limb because the chances of their predictions being fulfilled were very, very slim. I mean, who would ever have thought that those 8 points would have been fulfilled in any detail? But friends, let me say again, the Bible prophets have never been wrong in their predictions. Now, that's a pretty good track record, isn't it? Wouldn't you agree? You see, friends, God, the God of the prophets, the God of heaven, the God of the Bible, he takes this matter of predicting the future very, very seriously. And he leaves no room for mistakes. In fact, he points to his ability to predict the future as proof that he is the true God. What he says is this: forget the astrologers, forget the clairvoyants, they've got no track record like me. Forget the Mayans, the Mayan calendar, they can't do what I can do. You listen to what he says here: I am God, and there is none like me. Not the Mayans, not the clairvoyants, not the astrologers. He says there are none like me, declaring the end from the beginning And from ancient times, the things that are not yet done. He says, here's a challenge to you skeptics, you atheists and unbelievers. You see, friends, every prophecy in the Bible is an invitation to prove God wrong. If they can. But you know, no one ever has. Remember, there are thousands of predictions and prophecies in this book. We call it the Bible. Some call it the Word of God. No one has ever been able to disprove the predictions that have been made in this book. Now, friends, not only did the prophets make accurate predictions about these ancient civilizations, they made even more amazing predictions about the times in which you and I live, our civilization. You see, friends, the Bible, with its perfect track record, has made some amazing predictions regarding the times in which we live. Predictions that will affect Australia, that affect Australia today, and throw light on the future. You know, friends, some amazing things have been happening in our part of the world recently. Last September, our It Is Written film crew went over to New Zealand to produce a program on the earthquake. You know, there was a massive earthquake just across the Tasmania, 7.1 on the Richter scale. Buildings collapsed, over $1 billion worth of damage, but no loss of life. Amazing. We filmed a program right there on location in Christchurch. It's a great program. We were so proud of what we'd done. Then in January, you'll remember, there were massive floods just north of here in Queensland, remember? And then there was Cyclone Yasi. And just when we were preparing to film, to put to air the program on Christchurch, Christchurch was hit with a second earthquake that virtually leveled the CBD. You remember? Many, many lives were lost. It was inappropriate. It was outdated for us to show the first program. We couldn't even get it to air. We had to pull it off the air. And then just when we were thinking what a terrible disaster that was, then over in Japan, what happens? Another massive earthquake, 9 on the Richter scale. Followed by a tsunami, nuclear meltdown of their nuclear plants. Something is happening. Something important lies ahead. And friends, the Bible throws a lot of very relevant light and information on our period of Earth's history. Next week, I'm going to talk about modern fulfillments of prophecy. Predictions that affect you and me, the way we live, what's happening in our society, what's happening in our country, and what's happening in our world. As I said, friends, there are some amazing predictions in here about ancient civilizations, but even more amazing predictions about our own civilization. Accurate in every detail. And we need to know about it because it impacts upon your life and mine. It has an impact upon our families and our future as families, as a nation. I want to invite you, friends, to make sure that you hear next week's presentation. It's going to be the most relevant, up-to-date discussion on Bible prophecy dealing with the times in which you and I live. After looking at the amazing accuracy, the fulfillment of these prophecies given by the prophets of the Bible, given by the God of the Bible, I think it's just fitting for us to end our program this afternoon with a word of prayer. Could I invite you just to bow your heads right where you are? Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for your word, the Bible, and the amazing information that it contains. We thank you, Lord, that you give us this information because you want us to have confidence in your word, to know what is going to happen. Lord, When we see things happening around us today, we're asking, what does it all mean? What's going on? Where's it all leading? We know that by studying your word, we can get a far better understanding of where we are in the course of history. Thank you for your word, the Bible. Bless each one of us here this afternoon as we make our way homeward now. I ask these things in Jesus' name and for his sake. Amen.